There has been a lot of talk in the last 5 days or so about a law that was signed in Indiana by Governor Mike Pence last week, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It is not the only one in the country, but it is the one that is making the most noise because it seems as if it tells business people that they can discriminate against gay customers. You're gay? I don't want to provide this service for you. I don't want to sell this product to you because my religious beliefs find your gay relationships to be bad in whatever way they describe it. Seems to me to be kind of a cheap out to discrimination. But I've asked Steve Sanders to join us today. He is a professor of constitutional law and constitutional litigation and family law at the Maurer School of Law at Indiana University. Steve, welcome to the show. Can you explain what this law actually does?
Sure. Paul, government regulates our lives in all sorts of ways and imposes all sorts of rules that we're expected to comply with. Sometimes a religious person believes that a law that generally applies to everybody shouldn't have to apply to them because complying with the law would violate their religious freedom. What the RFRAs do is essentially give that person an opportunity to go to court and say, the government has to provide, in my case, a more compelling, a more substantial, a more important reason why it's important to apply that law to me, given that it conflicts with my religious beliefs. So in short, it puts the religious believer into a privileged position to force the government to show a stronger justification when that person believes the law conflicts with their religious belief.
Now, we have certain classes in our society that are protected who you cannot discriminate against legally. You can't discriminate based on race. You can't discriminate based on someone's religion. You can't discriminate against people based on gender. Sexual orientation is not covered in many places, Indiana being one of those, correct?
That's correct. There are, I think at current count, 21 states that protect sexual orientation. Indiana does not, but somewhere around a dozen municipalities in Indiana have their own municipal civil rights laws that do cover sexual orientation.
Okay, so let's take this into a non-covered area besides same-sex marriage. Let's say we have two people who are living together, a man and a woman. They're living together. They have been living in a one-bedroom apartment for quite a while. It's their anniversary. He wants to buy a cake for her. He wants to buy flowers for her. He goes to a baker. He goes to a florist. He wants to order these things. But the owner of that business says, well, wait a second, you two are living in sin. According to my religion, that's wrong. I will not sell you the cake. I will not sell you the flowers. Can they do that?
I think so, because the people you've identified, the couple, don't belong to any category of people who are protected against discrimination. So the default rule is that a business owner can turn away anyone he or she wants unless the customer is a member of a class like race, religion, like gender, like some place of sexual orientation. If the turning away is because of that protected characteristic, then the law says no, you can't do that. But if you're just the person doesn't like the way you look or doesn't like the way who you live with, who your roommate is, that's not a protected category in the law, so the business owner can discriminate right now.
Okay, so although I believe that everybody should serve everybody and that you shouldn't be able to hide your bigotry behind your religious beliefs, it seems to me that if that's the law for an unmarried heterosexual couple, it should also be the rule for an unmarried gay couple, even if they are trying to get married or if they actually are married in Indiana.
Oh, well, I think you have to look at when governments pass civil rights laws that protect certain categories of people, to protect race, protect religion, protect, in some states, sexual orientation. What those governments have decided, essentially, is there's a history of a problem here that that anti-black or anti-Mexican racial and ethnic prejudice, prejudice against women, prejudice against gays and lesbians, is a social problem that deserves to be attacked by government policy. It destroys ideas of social equality and the social fabric. Discrimination against unmarried people living together historically has not been that kind of problem. It's not something that has been used in a systematic, invidious way to disadvantage a specifically identifiable group of people. So in a sense, you're right, the situations seem comparable, but in many cities and many states, government has made a decision that anti-gay discrimination is a social problem, like racial, ethnic, religious, gender discrimination, that we want to attack, and that's the basis for these laws.
That's exactly the answer I was hoping you would give there, because I think that's exactly the point here. This is discrimination against a class of people who, while they're not protected as a class in the law, they are still people who seem that they should deserve the same rights as every other person out there.
Well, and I think, we also, if we say the religious business owner gets a pass from having to do business with the gay customer or having to employ the gay job applicant, what we essentially say is there are still certain legitimate, okay, acceptable forms of discrimination in our society, and discrimination against gays and lesbians is one of those. I think we also tend to forget, and we've sort of covered up, the extent to which discrimination on the basis of race, discrimination against African Americans, whether it was service in restaurants or marriage or whatever, was also justified on the basis of the Bible and on the basis of religious belief. No one in their right mind would assert that belief today, but they did do that, 30, 40 years ago, and I think this is a similar situation.
And by the way, the same thing with interracial marriage. Even if we just keep it under the marriage tent, there was a time when people used religious excuses to be against interracial marriage.
No, that's right. In fact, the Loving versus Virginia, the Supreme Court case that said those laws against interracial marriage were unconstitutional, the Virginia trial court judge who banished the couple from the state, the couple in that case who'd gotten married, specifically invoked God and the Bible, said God created the races and put them on separate continents, and if they hadn't intermixed, we wouldn't have to be dealing with this issue. So
right.
Absolutely, religion was used to justify racial discrimination as well.
So that great Loving case by the Supreme Court changed everything for interracial couples, and it's possible that this year the Supreme Court will change things for gay couples and allow gay marriage to be legal everywhere in the United States. What would that do to Indiana and the other 19 states that have religious freedom laws?
Technically nothing. I mean, so the religious freedom laws regulate what private individuals and private businesses, whether they can get exemptions from laws or not. Marriage laws apply to the government. And so right now it's legal for same-sex couples to get married in Indiana. That was settled by a court decision from the Seventh Circuit back in October, and that hasn't been disturbed. So same-sex marriage is legal right now in Indiana. The point I have made is these RFRAs are a symbolic statement, I think, by certain conservative Christian groups against having to accept same-sex marriage. What they essentially say is, we lost the battle in the courts, government has to give these people marriage licenses, but if I still disapprove of them, if I still dislike them, the way I can voice that and make it known is by refusing to serve them in my place of business or my place of employment. So the two are not, the two are different in their legal effect and whose behavior they regulate, but they come together in the politics of the issue.
Now, I read a piece this morning that said that every other Religious Freedom Restoration Act applies to disputes between a person or entity and a government, but Indiana's explicitly applies to disputes between private citizens. Is that true?
I have not carefully compared Indiana's RFRA to the other states. If that's true, I think the significance is that typically it is the government gets involved when you're the victim of a discrimination and you have made a complaint to a government agency, then the government agency essentially represents you and files a charge against the business owner. That may be intended to cover the situation where a private individual who's been discriminated against just files their own lawsuit under some theory against the business owner. So I believe that's correct. It's not totally clear to me what the significance right now, practically, of that change is.
Okay. In a piece of yours that I read online this weekend, you talked about how, and you mentioned a little while ago, it's conservative Christians who pushed this through. And yet, in many places around this country, we have municipalities and even states that have been talking about, we have to ban Sharia law. There shouldn't be that sort of religious law being passed in this country. Are the Venn diagram circles overlapping here, or is it just me?
Oh, no, I think they're definitely overlapping. I think, you know, I don't want anything I say to be construed as saying that religious believers of whatever faith don't have a right to participate in public debate and persuade people to their cause and critique law and lobby legislators and so forth. But I think what we're seeing is people who actually want to have their religious beliefs codified into law to the exclusion of other people's religious beliefs. So that's why you get the opposition to Sharia law, yet that comes from the same people who sort of insist that a biblical understanding of marriage or sexuality or anything else should be recognized by government, should be recognized by the courts. I think it's a group that's accustomed to having a sense of privilege and to being deferred to and having people believe we are a Christian country. They're feeling that under attack right now, under pressure, as gay rights increase, as American society becomes more secular, and I think they're fighting back on various different fronts.
Yeah, it sucks when you're the person in power and eventually some of that power is taken away and distributed to other people so that everybody can have some power and it can be a more fair an equitable society. Now, there have been some corporations this last 5 days or so that have been talking about how they might stop doing business in Indiana. Do you think that's going to have an impact on the legislators there?
Oh, I don't think it's going to convince a majority of legislators to change their mind. I think most of them, these were party line votes in both houses. I think the Republican legislators who voted for this believe that the more immediate practical threat to them comes from the conservative religious groups or from a Tea Party opponent who might primary them from the right. And these rumblings from businesses and conventions and so forth probably seem a little more abstract to that particular group, or those legislators assume that those groups won't actually follow through on their threats. I think it'll be an example of prioritizing short-term thinking and political welfare over long-term state welfare.
As it often is, we always get short-term political thinkers, and that's why we don't get long-term solutions to our problems. Steve, I appreciate your time today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Great talking with you, Paul.
Steve
Bye-bye.
Sanders is a professor of constitutional law and constitutional litigation and family law at the Indiana University Maurer School of Law.